Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. More than a month has passed since Tara Reid publicly accused Joe Biden of sexually assaulting her in the 1990s. The presumptive Democratic presidential nominee broke his silence during an interview Friday on MSNBC, saying that it never happened. But how do such accusations and denials resonate in the age of social distancing? Joining us is Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. We'll post a link to that on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Welcome back, Ken.
Good morning, Ann. Thank you.
Before we get to the Biden-Reid topic, I did want to ask you generally to address the impact of the pandemic on politics. It's anything but usual these days.
Oh, my goodness. And what's so interesting about this is it has become political. The fact is that wearing a mask or distancing yourself from others in a crowd seems to be decided upon whether you're a Democrat or a Republican, which is beyond belief. But that's what seems to happen. It seems like Democrats are more willing to take serious precautionary measures and distance themselves and stay home. And Republicans, for the most part, or at least many of the people who are protesting at state capitals around the country, states that have been shut down, seem to be pro-Trump, libertarian kind of folks who said that the government has no right to tell you what to do and that their right to earn a living and support their families, of course, while not minimizing that, should outweigh any kind of health concerns.
Why do you think it's fallen, been politicized in this way? What do you make of that?
Well, part of it is the fact that Donald Trump has said that he admires these protesters. He's tweeted, the president has tweeted things like liberate Minnesota, liberate Michigan, and he has encouraged those people to show up and demonstrate against, you know, the closing of the states. Most of the states where they're having those demonstrations are in Democratic states run by Democratic governors. But of course, Ohio has Mike DeWine, and there have been protests there. There have been protests in Maryland, and the governor there is Larry Hogan. So it's not just against Democratic governors. But while there are people there who are saying that, you know, their business, their livelihoods and businesses and complete lifestyles are being ruined and changed and harmed, others are showing up with military assault rifles and Trump signs. And
Proud Boys have made themselves known in Ohio.
Well, I've seen that stuff. I've seen racial and ethnically challenging signs who are attacking people based on their race or religion, which has nothing to do with it, one would think, except this is an opportunity to bring out some of those, I don't know what to call them, other than Charlottesville kind of folks who have come out to protest along with the others. But it can get, it has gotten ugly and unsightly, shall we say.
In Ohio, it's interesting that they're demonstrating mostly against the state medical director, Dr. Amy Acton, and not the governor.
Well, when you think of when the governor decided to postpone the primary in mm-hmm. March, it was basically the health coordinator who made that ultimate decision that Governor DeWine cited in carrying out that decision.
Right. I'm wondering, in states like Ohio that are pretty much completely dominated by Republicans, does the president back them into a corner in any particular way, given his support of the demonstrators and his urging to open up the states, even though, you know, as in Ohio, they're doing it very cautiously at this point?
Well, you know, something, yes and no, because the governors I've heard, including my Governor DeWine, mm-hmm. they have said that they will take into account the health of their citizens far more than any directives from the White House. But at some point, I think there was a point where DeWine said something like, well, I can't mandate that you wear masks because people don't like to be told what to do. And that's true. I mean, I remember back in the day when people didn't like to be told that they have to wear a seatbelt, mm-hmm. but people are wearing seatbelts to save lives and protect lives. So So just to watch these demonstrations and to watch people bring children and even babies to demonstrations without masks and by violating the, you know, stay 6 feet away from everybody mandate, it's just, I understand their anger and I understand their rebellious nature, but to put themselves and the people next to them and their families at risk, at health risk, to make a political point just seems astonishing.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Ken Rudin, a political journalist, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. If you have a question or comment for Ken, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You're listening during Giving Tuesday now. It's a global day of giving, and it's your chance to support WOSU Public Media. For today only, your gift to 89.7 NPR News will be matched up to $50,000 thanks to the great Ann and Tom DeMarco. Give now and give as generously as you can at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. You know, the story of the coronavirus has been changing rapidly, and since you're relying on 89.7 NPR News and All Sides to keep you informed, it's a good time to support this nonprofit news source. Contributions from listeners make this show possible. Please join us now for today only. Your gift will be matched. Give at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678 and make a gift in any amount, and that gift will be matched. It's your chance to support the news and information you depend on, the news you trust. On All Sides with Ann Fisher, you've heard from healthcare experts, economists, top political officials, and many more important decision makers. And we bring them on this show for you to get you answers to the questions you have during this unprecedented time. If having this kind of information available is important to you, then we're asking you to make a gift and give what fits into your budget. Give at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. And remember, for today only, for Giving Tuesday now, we have a match. Your gift will be matched up to $50,000 thanks to Ann and Tom DeMarco. So when you give right now, your money goes further. Give at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. Whew, Ken Rudin.
And can I jump in here for a second? Because you just mentioned that the story has been changing rapidly. And I would make the case that for the most part, the facts have remained the same. We were told by Dr. Fauci and others who tracked this thing and concerned about the health of everybody that it's a deadly disease, it's spreading, and it's only going to get worse. And so when you add that to the fact that states are opening up without their rates coming down, with more and more people testing positive, where the fact is we're seeing 1,750 deaths per day, and then we think by the end of May it's going to be 3,000 per day. We're getting maybe 30,000 new cases a day. They think by the end of May, there'll be 200,000 new cases per day. So what Dr. Fauci and the health officials are warning is that it's going to get worse before it's getting better. And that's why this rush to open, to see these open beaches and open parks and in Georgia, tattoo parlors and bowling alleys. These are places where the infections could very well rise. And I could see the case being made in May and June that, whoops, we made a mistake by opening too soon and everything has to be closed again. Fauci and the others have been saying from the beginning, this is deadly, we should not be taken lightly, and it's going to only get worse. And not everybody sees that.
And furthermore, going back to what we were saying earlier, what we were talking about is the politicization of it. It changes. They keep saying we're all in this together, but Americans are still not even in this together. There's still this polarization.
Well, look at the town hall meeting. Well, not a town hall meeting, but the town hall kind of setup that President Trump had on the right below Abe Lincoln at the Lincoln Memorial, which is against federal law, but the Secretary of Interior gave him the okay to violate the law for just that one time. But the president was interviewed by Fox News, I guess it was last Sunday, And I think 4 million people tuned in. And this is a time, an opportunity for the president to show leadership, to show compassion, to show empathy, but especially leadership. And he spent a good portion of the interview attacking China, attacking the World Health Organization, attacking the media, attacking Biden and President Obama. And this is, you know, you always think, I mean, we always talk about this, you know, Ronald Reagan during the Challenger and Bill Clinton during Oklahoma City and George W. Bush during 9/11, they rallied the country behind them. And one of the reasons I think the country is not rallying behind anybody because they are conflicting and almost confrontational messages and finger pointing messages that you're getting from the White House, which is an opportunity. Forget about the election in November. It's an opportunity for the country to come together in this unbelievable crisis, and yet it's just not happening.
Sometimes it's hard to believe that more people have died in 3 months than died during the whole Vietnam War.
Oh, and the fact that we're talking about, we're thinking by the end of May, 3,000 people per day are expected to be lost, and to see these demonstrations, to see these people. I mean, for example, at the Senate yesterday, which opened up, the House doesn't come back until, I guess, next week, but the Senate decided to come in early because there were some judicial nominations they wanted to push through. Rand Paul, the senator from Kentucky, who had COVID-19 right. and recovered from it, was seen there without wearing a mask. I mean, Vice President Pence shows up at the Mayo Clinic where they're instructed everybody wears a mask.
What?
And he doesn't.
Well, what about that? I mean, I didn't understand what he was. Does he not want to appear in a mask?
Well, at first he said, I want to look people in the eye. Now, as far as I know, you don't cover your eyes with the mask. You cover your nose and the mouth. He later said, I think he later acknowledged that he did make a mistake, which is something you won't hear from the president of the United States. The vice president said, I should have worn a mask. And I think there was a plant he visited or maybe in Indiana, and he wore a mask. And I think he acknowledged he made a mistake. But the signal it sends, the almost arrogance that everybody should do these things, but not me because I'm tested every day, that doesn't cut it. And it's just, Why? But I think what more than Mike Pence or Rand Paul not wearing a mask, it's these kids that the parents are bringing to these rallies and they are not wearing masks. And that, to me, is beyond criminal.
You're listening to All Sides with Dan Fisher during Giving Tuesday Now, and it's your chance to support WOSU Public Media during a global day of giving in response to COVID-19. And today is extra special because we have a match. When you give today, your gift in any amount will be matched up to $50,000 thanks to Ann and Tom DeMarco. When you support public radio today, your dollars will be amplified. So give now. Don't wait. And have your gift matched at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. 89.7 NPR News is an essential resource in your daily life. We're giving you reliable information about the coronavirus so you can make smart decisions for yourself, your family, your workplace, and your community. You are an essential part of 89.7 NPR News' daily life, too. Our contributing listeners provide the largest share of our funding, money that fuels our editorial independence. You're going to continue to count on 89.7 NPR News, and we're hoping we can count on you. Be a part of Giving Tuesday Now, and your gift will be amplified because of our $50,000 match from the wonderful DeMarcos. Give it WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. We'll return to our conversation with Ken Rudin, journalist and host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast after this. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher, and we're talking about politics today with Ken Rudin, political journalist and host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. We'll post a link to the podcast on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. If you have a question or comment for Ken Rudin, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And before we move on, I want to just tell you that you're listening to Giving Tuesday Now, and it's your chance to support WOSU Public Media during a global day of giving in response to COVID-19. For today only, your gift to 89.7 NPR News will be matched up to $50,000, thanks to Ann and Tom DeMarco. Support your source for trusted news and information during these challenging times. Support 89.7 NPR News right now and have that gift matched. Today only at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. Facts, not filters. That's what we bring you on 89.7 NPR News, and that is all thanks to your support. Please make a gift to 89.7 NPR News today and be a part of Giving Tuesday Now at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. It's a great time to consider making an additional gift to our station. There are many people in our community who wish they could give right now, but they can't. They are relying on the news and information from this station every day. If you are already a member of 89.7 NPR News, we thank you. But right now, we're asking you to make an additional gift to support this trusted news source. Make an additional gift of $100 or $200 to keep this news available to everyone in Central Ohio. Give at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. And remember, this is Giving Tuesday Now, and so it is one day only. And your gift will be matched for today only. Don't wait. Give at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. Ken Rudin, I wanted to go back to the Biden-Reid issue. The Secretary of the Senate on Monday denied former Vice President Joe Biden's request to find out if the records exist of a sexual harassment complaint made by former Senate aide Tara Reid. What was the point of him requesting the Secretary of the Senate look into the records of the complaint from 1993 after a month of relative silence?
Well, before I go on, I hate to bring this up, but I'm having some connecting issues with you. And so at some point, your producer is going to have to call me on my landline in case it goes out again, because it's gone out several times during the break. But having said that, basically, if Tara Reid did file a complaint against Joe Biden, as she said she did after his alleged attacks in 1993, it would have gone to the National Archives. At first he went to the National Archives and said, I would like to have any record of Tara Reid and I want you to check it. And they say, we have no say in that. It has to go to the Senate. And then the Senate says, well, we can't release any kind of personnel issue because it violates you know, private rights. So that is kind of made things kind of a little difficult and uncomfortable for Joe Biden. Can I just go into this is a fascinating story because first of all, we have been not instructed because of a dictum from high above, but when a woman makes an accusation like that, we have learned that we need to take it seriously. Mm-hmm. Not only did we not take it seriously in the past, a lot of our reaction to charges like this were depending on how we felt politically. And the reason I say that is because when women came forward about Donald Trump, and I think there have been like 26 of them so far, with accusations of everything between sexual assault and sexual harassment and things like that, many in the Me Too movement believed it because Donald Trump has basically had a reputation for this guy. He even bragged about it on the famous Access Hollywood tape.
Right.
And we know that he paid off a porn star. So we know that that's been there. When women came forward against Bill Clinton in 1991, 1992, a lot of the media and the Democratic Party did not believe them because they said, well, Bill Clinton is, you know, is a paragon of working for women's rights. So we didn't believe, we believed him and not them. That is risky when you decide whom to believe because of your own politics. But having said that, there are things that Tara Reid has said, and she absolutely should be taken seriously. But there are so many things that just doesn't make, so many things that don't make sense to me. For example, Joe Biden was completely vetted by the Obama team in 2008.
Right.
And I guarantee he was vetted by the Republicans as well. If they were going to find, if they were going to come up with the fact that Barack Obama was born in Kenya and the fact that President Trump was parroting that for years, certainly if there was something about Joe Biden, we would have known about it, especially in 1992, 93, when the Bob Packwood story was going around. If there was anything else about Joe Biden, we would have known it. And the fact is, Tara Reid has, you know, she said that she spoke to people in Biden's office. The New York Times and the Washington Post interviewed over 20 people, and they all said that it never happened, that she never came to them. Her brother has changed his story about the, what happened. Her neighbor has backtracked on the story that that she said, that he said she told her. The story's been changed so many times. Tara Reid, as recently as 2017, was praising Joe Biden on Twitter as somebody who fights for women's rights and things like that. There were just so many things that, look, it needs to be investigated. We should not knee-jerk dismiss it just because Joe Biden is a good guy or he's supported the Violence Against Women Act. But the fact is that we also can't automatically say that because she says it, it's true. And so that puts the media and the Democratic Party in a tough position, but it should be investigated thoroughly.
How are Republicans trying to capitalize on this? Are they? Because I think you make the salient point that he was probably thoroughly vetted back the last time he was running.
Well, the Republicans are doing something very clever. They can't say, I mean, President Trump said, well, I believe you, Joe, because I get false accusations all the time and you should speak out on it. But the Republicans are not putting up President Trump as an example. They're putting up Brett Kavanaugh as an example. And they say, well, he had, you know, Christine Blasey Ford came forward with no corroborating witnesses, with she had no real memory of when it happened or if it happened or how it happened. Now, she didn't accuse, certainly, she didn't accuse Kavanaugh of the kind of things that Tara Reid is accusing Biden of, and she's certainly not accusing him of rape. She accused him of a drunken event that she wiggled out of, but... But the Republicans saying, well, if we believe Christine Blasey Ford, why don't we believe Tara Reid? And that's what the Republicans and Ronald McDaniel, Mitt Romney's niece, by the way, Republican National Chair, that's what they're pointing to. They're pointing to Christine Blasey Ford and Brett Kavanaugh. And it's a fair argument in the sense that, you know, we can't knee-jerk respond and agree with somebody because we agree with them and not support them because they may be attacking somebody we like. And that is a fair point, except for the fact that there are just so many holes in Tara Reid's complaint that it just doesn't feel right. It doesn't really pass the smell test. But again, this should not be an automatic reaction by the media or the Democrats because of your own political beliefs. And that's why the New York Times and Washington Post, even though I think they did ignore this story for longer than they would have if it were somebody else, but they investigated it thoroughly. And everything just seems to tell me that it's not the way that Tara Reid describes it.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. My guest is Ken Rudin, political journalist, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. Have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513. And Charles in London, you're on the air. Hi, Charles.
Yeah, thank you. I'm so glad that Ken went into some of the details about the inconsistency of Tara Reid's story. Christine Blasey Ford, on the other hand, she had said, her story hasn't changed, and from what I understand, 16 years ago, she had actually said something to one of her psychologists. and counselors about it, and her story never changed. So there is a difference between a credible accusation and the consistency of that same accusation. And there are a lot of other things going on with Brett Kavanaugh. So, but anyway, what I wanted to get into is that the dynamic that's supporting Donald Trump is his enablers. And he has co-opted the machine that Bill Kristol and Rupert Murdoch have created of this counter-conservative media machine, which in my opinion, and I'm not trying to insult anybody. I talked to a lot of Trump supporters, and I haven't found one that doesn't fall under this guise. They're low information and misinformation voters, and they get misinformed from Fox News or uninformed from Fox News and the conservative radio. And what this has done is get them to vote against their own interests because they don't even understand the benefits of certain policies. And what the progressives need to do is they need to focus on one word this cycle, and that's false equivalency. And the reason why they need to explain false equivalency is because here you have one accuser against Joe Biden who can't keep her story straight within the course of 18 months, which is why it didn't get any media play, because they couldn't vet any of this stuff. And Trump was being accused by dozens of women, and they're asking for DNA samples and everything. You don't ask for a DNA sample unless you got something to back it up with, I would assume. So false equivalency is very important, that they explain to people that there's a big difference between the type of whataboutism that Trump's tried to bring up and conservatives try to bring up, and what's going on the Democratic side of the issue.
Okay.
And,
well,
thank you. I'll take my response.
One question, Charles. Are you doing okay?
Yes. I'm doing good.
Okay.
And so thank you for asking. Your
okay.
producer asked.
Okay.
I think they're doing as good a job as they can. One critique against DeWine, he shouldn't have caved on the face mask. The science is clear on that. And you guys stay healthy, stay safe, and all the listeners stay healthy, stay
all
safe.
Right. Thanks.
And I'm praying for everybody. Thank
you, Charles. Take care. The false equivalency issue. Ken Rudin.
Oh, my. I think, for one, Charles should have his own show. Two, I would listen every day. Three, I really appreciate his best wishes to everybody. And I mean, he's an example of what's the greatness about public radio. And I really appreciate his call. I agree with almost everything he said, probably everything he said about the false equivalency. It reminds me of the days back in 2016 when the media were reporting things about Donald Trump, and there would always be the obligatory, but what about Hillary's emails?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, there would be a false equivalency. The fact that Donald Trump, 2 days after the Access Hollywood tape, showed up at a debate with Hillary Clinton and brought all of the Bill Clinton accusers and had them sit in the audience, as if he had no sense of irony at all. No, I mean, he just... It's just remarkable what they do. So there is a false equivalency. The media do it all too often, which is regrettable. Although it's interesting, he mentioned Bill Kristol mm-hmm. as one of the people who have enabled Donald Trump in the beginning, and that may be the case, just like Morning Joe and CNN basically enabled Donald Trump in 2015, and now they're, at least Bill Kristol is one of those never-Trumpers. But it's just interesting how things change. But it's everything isn't, you know, cookie cutter. You have to take everything by the merits and investigate it. And I think that's what's being done with the Tara Reid. And the more I read about the Tara Reid accusations, I mean, something clearly must have happened. But to go from inappropriate shoulder touching to what she's describing now, it just shows somebody who may be embellishing it. And it's interesting, it's not only the Republican right, it's not only Fox News and the Republicans who are latching on to this Tara Reid story. It's many on the, I don't want to say the Bernie Sanders left, but I'll just say on the left, who don't like Joe Biden, who feel that he's a corporatist and is no different than Donald Trump. There are some on the left who are encouraging the Tara Reid stories as
mm-hmm.
well.
Mm-hmm. You know, I wanted to talk about the politics of the pandemic for just a second. The New York Times is reporting about that internal White House document predicting the daily death toll that you mentioned will reach about $3,000 lives on June 1st, nearly double the current number of about 1,750. And by November, if that's the case and if that happens and if these states start reopening, we're going to see a lot of people get sick, a lot of people dying. And I'm wondering, Do you have any sense about how that could translate at the polls in November?
Now, of course, we both agree, and I know we're not saying that this is the most important thing. Obviously, it's the health and safety of Americans. But doing with a political angle, this is a very serious question. I mean, we saw, for example, in Wisconsin on April 7th, when the Republicans insisted that the primary stay open, they tried to, Governor Evers, after a long delay, I should say, finally decided to postpone the primary, but apparently he didn't have the right to do so. The Republican Supreme Court, or at least I should say the conservative Supreme Court, because it's not partisan, refused to allow it, and the Republican legislature refused to allow an extension. So a lot of people decided that, well, the only way to vote is to call for absentee ballots, request absentee ballots. There are untold numbers, perhaps in the thousands, of people who requested absentee ballots and didn't get it. Or if they got it, they got it at the last second. It was too late to submit them. So if this does continue, I mean, maybe I was always told that maybe it was going to level off a bit during the summer, but then come back in the fall just as flu season was starting. And then it could be just as Dr. Fauci said, it could be far worse in the fall than it is right now, which is almost too horrifying to imagine, which means people are not going to get out of the house and they're going to have to vote by mail. And it is clear that it seems to me, I mean, by any stretch of by logic, that it's the Democrats who seem to be pushing for more and more access to the polls, more and more states being willing and able to vote by absentee mail, and Republicans saying, well, no, they shouldn't do that, even though the president himself voted in the Florida primary by absentee mail, but, you know, do as I say, but not what I do. Mm-hmm. So that is going to be a key issue, especially if the virus comes back with a vengeance or increases with a vengeance in the fall.
But we talk about how, you know, the economy drives voters. And I'm wondering, is there any parallel with deaths?
Well, I mean, look, we've never had anything like this. I always mean to do this, but I was always wondering how that 1918 epidemic, the Spanish flu that lasted until 1919, and you think of all the soldiers in World War I who had the disease and were fighting all over Europe, and it was just spreading.
They sent them over there even knowing they were sick.
Exactly. But what's different about this is just that it's just what the president had going for him. He had a lot of things going for him. He, on certain things like the confirmation of conservative judges, he promised he would do that and he delivered. And conservatives did like that. Mm-hmm. He promised to cut back on immigration and he did that and the conservatives liked it. He also touted the economy. Unemployment was down. Record number of unemployment was down. It was best it's been in decades. And so the president took credit for it. When things got bad, when the unemployment claims went up, it's now what? How many millions of people are now out of work? Tens of millions mm-hmm. of people out of work. It's Obama's fault. It's China's fault. It's the World Health Organization's fault. It's Biden's fault. So at some point, I keep thinking that people will see what is going on. I mean, you know, if you take the credit for the good, you have to take the credit for the bad or accept credit for the bad. And this president has never been able to do that. If it's great, I did it. If it's not great, you're responsible. And there are finger pointing. Voters see that, but the fascinating thing about Donald Trump is that his support has never wavered. It's still around the 43-44% of the American people will support him. As he said, you know, he can shoot somebody in the middle of Fifth Avenue and he won't lose support. They're sticking with him. What Joe Biden and the Democrats have to do is not to woo over Trump believers, because that's not going to happen. And I just one thing, when Charles called earlier, I think he should give more credit to the Trump supporters than he did. They're not ignorant. They're not, and I'm not saying Charles said that, but they're not, they just are tired of the politics of you as usual that they've seen. They didn't like the the changes in social policy, all these gays, you know, all these, you know, it's things are just changing too fast for some people. And Donald Trump did represent a return to that normalcy, even though it wasn't so normal. And it certainly wasn't normal for so many people. So there were, I don't know if the Democrats will ever be able to change the true Trump believers, but there was a lot of people who voted for Barack Obama, who then later voted for Donald Trump. And those are the people the Democrats desperately have to win back.
And people who voted for Barack Obama who didn't vote at all, and they got to turn out the vote.
Well, a lot of people didn't vote in 2016, and I think a lot of people may have voted for people like Jill Stein, the Green Party nominee.
Yeah.
And I think one of the reasons they did that, or even Gary Johnson, is, look, Hillary Clinton was clearly going to win. There was no way Donald Trump was going to win. So if I sit home, so if I vote for Jill Stein, it's not a big deal. I think 2020 is a big deal, and voters have to recognize that.
That's Ken Rudin, political journalist, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. He's on with us this hour, and you're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Today is Giving Tuesday now. Today is a global day of giving in response to COVID-19, and today is a day to support public radio. Give at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. And we have a generous matching challenge for Giving Tuesday now. Thanks to Ann and Tom DeMarco. Your gift in any amount will be matched up to $50,000, but this is for today only. Make a gift of $100 or $200 and have that matched. Your sustaining gift of $10 or $15 a month or $10,000 will be matched. Give at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. As a listener to 89.7 NPR News, you expect more than just the headlines about the COVID-19 virus outbreak. That's why we bring you this two-hour local talk show. During the show, we have the time to dig deep and provide the context you're looking for. You want to understand how this outbreak will impact health, science, and the economy, and today, politics. You're curious to learn what's happening around the world and how other countries are managing this fast-developing situation. You want to know what's happening at the State House and in the city of Columbus. And you learn all that and more on 89.7 NPR News through All Sides with Ann Fisher. Context, facts, accuracy, that's what we bring you on 89.7 NPR News, and that is all thanks to your support. Please make a gift to 89.7 NPR News today and be a part of Giving Tuesday now at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. And don't forget, your gift will be matched for today only. This is a chance for your dollars to go further, but this match is for today only. Don't wait. Give now at WOSU.org or 866-897-9678. We'll be right back on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking politics today with political journalist Ken Rudin, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. We'll have a link to that on our website at WOSU.org/allsides. You can also be a part of Giving Tuesday today. It's your chance to support WOSU Public Media during a global day of giving in response to COVID-19. And for today only, your gift to 89.7 NPR News will be matched up to $50,000, thanks to Ann and Tom DeMarco. So support your source for trusted news and information during these challenging times. Support 89.7 NPR News right now and have that gift matched today only at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. We heard from Ari Hashimoto in Westerville, who wrote, "I've always relied on WOSU Public Media for unbiased information. Now, with the world changing so rapidly day by day during this pandemic, I rely on public radio more than ever to get the latest reliable information that I can relay every day to my parents. English is not their first language. Thank you so much for keeping journalism with integrity alive and well." Thank you, Ari Hashimoto, for your support of 89.7 NPR News. And Ken Rudin, thanks as always for your support of 89.7 NPR News. these two. It's been over 10 years now that we've been talking politics, and it changes over time, but it never gets old.
Well, it shouldn't get old because, because I mean, it's almost, I was going to say, it's almost like baseball.
I think of it like sports.
Well, except, I mean, like, I love, you know, I love the history, the trivia, the lore, the great stories. But of course, it, you know, in the end, it doesn't matter if my New York Yankees win the World Series, but it does matter who is elected, and it does matter the kind of honesty and integrity you get from government leaders. And so it is obviously much more important. And it's just, you know, I mean, some people say, sometimes when I wake up in the morning and I pick up the New York Times and I pull it out of the bag, I'm almost afraid what the headlines are going to say because things have been just so awful lately. But that's what's so great about, you know, WOSU and public radio. And that's why I know this is probably, but if Joe Biden has to pick somebody, regardless of party, but some as vice president, and he says he'll pick a woman, I'm thinking about Ann DeMarco, because what she does for WOSU, what if she was vice president?
You know what, Ann DeMarco, you know what's so great about Ann DeMarco is she's also one of the people that religiously comes when we don't have our social distancing issues to answer the phones. During our membership drives. I mean, she puts her money where her mouth is, and she puts her feet where her mouth is. I mean, she comes in here and does just, you know, she's very down to earth.
Well, I'm thinking of Biden DeMarco buttons for the fall. But you know something, it is also remarkable. Look, we know that so many people have lost their livelihood and losing their jobs and are suffering. And the fact that so many people are able and willing to give to public radio just shows how important your task is, our task is.
Oh, my goodness. You know, it was interesting the other day when yesterday I was listening to DeWine's press conference in the car. I was driving, and I listened to it every day religiously, and he was starting to, I thought what he was going to do is stick up for Amy Acton and, you know, against the protesters and, you know, doing his buck stops here thing. But instead, he was defending journalists who have been being verbally attacked at the State House steps by protesters there. And it kind of took me aback. I wasn't expecting it. They're doing a hard job.
You know, it's funny how many things just jumped into my head at once. I was thinking of how somehow John Kasich, who was no slouch when it came to conservatism, the fact that he would just fight against Donald Trump even after Trump was elected. And then I was thinking, oh my God, today is the 50th anniversary of the Bob Taft, James Rhodes Senate primary, which I remember very well, which happened a day after Kent State, and that jumped into my head as well. I mean, that's what I think fascinates me most, what I love most about politics, is that there were giants who came before the present, and they were good and the bad, but they all had amazing stories, and they all affected our lives in some way. So when you think of the horrors of Kent State and what happened in that terrible year and the things that followed with the killings of two students at Jackson State and Augusta and things like that, it was all about politics and people standing up to oppression and standing up to discrimination. And I think that's what makes it so fascinating for us to talk about, because for all the eye rollings we get about people in political life, there are people who put their own sacrifices and lives on the line every day to make things better for this country. Boy, where'd that come from, right?
You know, it's Ken Rudin. That's Ken Rudin, people.
We had Mike DeWine and James Rhodes. And, I mean, in a few minutes, I guarantee we're going back to Frank Lausche. I just know it.
Actually, the first time I ever saw James Rhodes in person was at an event at Mike DeWine's. I think it might have been a Mike DeWine or a George Voinovich event back in.
I have even a better story. Yeah. In 1975, I was at a button convention in Columbus. I do not make this up. And James Rhodes was there with his wife.
Wow.
How do you like that?
That's,
how do you like that?
Yeah, I'm telling you. We've got emails. We've got emails galore.
Okay.
from Brad in Columbus. He says, I'd like Ken's opinion on this statement. If Trump wins re-election, he is truly a genius. Trump has created the perfect storm here. He first broke the confidence people have in the press. Then he assaulted the truth on a daily basis using his propaganda Fox machine. And now he is continuing to repeat false information. And no one knows what to believe. This is a farce. This is Animal Farm. I think the whole repeat it and it will become true is not a rule medical science follows.
The fact that here we are 6 months to go before the election, the fact that, we have millions and millions of people out of work, the fact that we know that so much of the president of the United States comes before a briefing and suggests that possibly injecting disinfectant might help, and the fact that we don't know who's going to win the presidency is a tremendous testament to Donald Trump's political skills. You know, people say, well, he's this or that, but you have to be some kind of a marketing genius if you can, even with all your temper tantrums and even with all your things that are not necessarily true, without saying the obvious word that he's lying, but the fact is that this election could be very, very close is just one, a testament to what he's done, two, to a sad reflection of what's happening to the country. And three, you know, all that hopey, changey stuff that we used to mock Barack Obama about in 2007, 2008, that just seems like a million years ago. There's just such anger. It's us against them or them against us. And it's, I mean, this election, these debates, they're going to be brutal. And I don't think, to be honest with you, even if Hillary Clinton had won in 2016, even if Joe Biden wins in November, I don't know if things much are going to change, because it's not just Donald Trump who's doing whatever he's doing. It was think of Mitch McConnell and the refusal to allow Merrick Garland a hearing, let alone a vote in the Senate. Mm-hmm. There are so many people who are doing what they have to do in the name of politics, whether it's good for the country or not, that it's not just one person and it's not just one election that will fix things.
What about the Senate? It's teetering. What is your sense about that?
It is teetering. I mean, first of all, the Democrats, it's now 53-47. So the Democrats need at least three for a 50-50 tie, four if Trump is reelected, because then, you know, if they have three, their vice mm-hmm. president, Vice President DeMarco, could, you know, break the tie in the Senate. But they're going to definitely, almost certainly going to lose the seat, Doug Jones' seat in Alabama. So that means the Democrats have to pick up another one. And there are Republicans who are teetering, absolutely. Susan Collins in Maine is no better than even. Cory Gardner in Colorado, Tom Tillis in North Carolina, Martha McSally in Arizona. They are definitely endangered. I know people talk about beating Mitch McConnell and they talk about beating Lindsey Graham. That is more unlikely. But the battle for the Senate is real. And as I said, as Merrick Garland proved, winning the Senate is almost as important, if not in many ways more important, than who controls the presidency. Because Barack Obama was president during the Merrick Garland thing and he couldn't get a Supreme Court nomination past the Republican Senate.
Today is Giving Tuesday. Now it's your chance to support WOSU Public Media during a global day of giving in response to COVID-19. For today only, your gift of to 89.7 NPR News will be matched up to $50,000 thanks to Ann and Tom DeMarco. Give now at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. This is an important time for all of us to be well informed. We're here at 89.7 NPR News and All Sides with Ann Fisher, and we're bringing you reliable information about the coronavirus. We are here with shows that answer your questions and help you put this global news story into context. You depend on reliable information so you can make informed decisions for yourself, your family, and your community, and that fits right into the mission of public radio, bringing you reliable information day after day. We're able to bring you this important coverage thanks to the generosity of listeners who have given in the past. Please join them. And for today only, have that gift matched up to $50,000 thanks to a generous challenge from Ann and Tom DeMarco. Give at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. Do it for yourself. Do it for the benefit of the thousands of listeners who rely on us every day. 866-897-9678. Ken Rudin, political journalist, host of Ken Rudin's Political Junkie podcast. Thanks, as always, for joining us today.
the hour can't be over already.
I know. Thank you so much, though, and Ken, for all your support over the years. And everybody else out there, your gift of $100 or $200 or a sustaining gift of $15 or $20 a month will be matched. Give at WOSU.org or call 866-897-9678. And thank you.
Today is Giving Tuesday Now, your chance to support WOSU Public Media during a global day of giving in response to COVID-19. For today only, your gift to 89.7 NPR News will be matched up to $50,000, thanks to Ann and Tom DeMarco. Support your source for trusted news and information during these challenging times. Support 89.7 NPR News and have that gift matched today only at WOSU.org or by calling 866-897-9678.